Welcome to the Hot Lock Podcast. Kevin Easy, Padres beat writer for the Union Tribune. Ryan Fidley, sports editor for the Union Tribune. I am in Phoenix. Padres, very quick three-game road trip. That's before a very quick three-game homestand against the Red Sox. But Padres, Diamondbacks were sellers. You may have heard the Padres were buyers. Padres just played their first post-deadline series. You would say it was a success. They took two or three from the Cardinals. Ryan, where would you like to start?
I'd like to start with that. I'd like to start with not only the series, but the new guy. We've had a chance to see now at least the Padres position players in action, some of them a couple of times. Early grades, Kevin, on, I guess we should go in order. Laureano, O'Hearn, and Fermin. Let's start with Laureano. He hit a home run yesterday. That has to be worth something.
He did hit a home run at an infield single as well. He had a triple the night before, a run-scoring triple, and scored. He's been, I don't know how you ask for more out of three games, right? Like, if all of us are looking for the next Ryan Ludwig, we have not found him yet. In Laureano, he, you know, is a big target, right? Like the left fielder, getting that right-handed bat. By the way, this guy hits righties better than lefties this year, at least. He plays an adequate, if not, you know, above adequate left field. I got to say, so far, okay, all right. That was one of your targets, one of your needs, and you get an A through the first three games. That's what you get.
Yep, yeah, and you've only got about 70 more if you want to go as far as you want to go here. It's funny, with him, one thing that jumped out at me, just watching from home, he seems to get the ball back into the infield. There was a situation yesterday, it was a sacrifice fly to left. He sort of caught it flat-footed, turned it through. I mean, just caught it through it almost without stepping. And there was nearly a play at the plate on something that did not seem like it would be a play at the plate. Again, he's quit, if not slightly better than adequate defensive left fielder. But compared to some of the guys the Padres have been putting out there this year, starting with Jason Hayward, that's for adequate is an upgrade at that position. Let's talk about Ryan O'Hearn a little bit, Kev.
I like what you just
somebody
said. I like what you just said, though, about Laureano, because you know that Mike Schilt notices that stuff. And every time there is that little tiny thing that could make a difference and will make a difference a few times a season, that's what I think about, is how a guy fits in with the Padres. So I like that you pointed that out.
Yep. I know, Hearn. Kevin, I look at him and I see Gavin Sheets. They seem so similar to me, except O'Hearn, at least before he got, was hitting for a much higher average. Is the idea here that he is going to play every day with Sheets seeing spot work? I mean, that's certainly what it looks like to me.
That's the here, and you know, players are already kind of talking about, like, just because, you know, Gavin Sheets had assimilated himself so well, had contributed so much, has become a part of the team. You know, some guys are, like, bummed about it. Not, like, bummed that Ryan O'Hearn's here, but, you know, just – in conversation, pointing out kind of the humanity of it all, right? Like, Tyler Wade loses his job, and then here's a guy who was playing every day and was such a big contributor, and that really their hope is that he gets to come up in some big moments and be a contributor going forward. So in no way, I don't want anybody interpreting like, oh, it's a bummer that Ryan O'Hearn's here. No. Just that, like, yes, there was a casualty to this, and I thought that, I mean, honestly, Gavin Sheets is one of the most stand-up dudes and was a contributor, so that's always nice when there's a stand-up guy who has been a contributor. The way that he put it, and I wrote about it, that winning baseball is the most fun baseball, that yes, everybody's role, including mine, is going to change, but it's all about winning. And I believe that Gavin Sheets absolutely meant that. He even pointed out, like, that he's already – let me make sure that I'm conveying this properly, that in the way that he meant it. He's already accomplished personally what he wanted to this year, which was to reestablish himself as a big leaguer, has some career highs already. And the other thing was to be a part of a winner. And he's a part of a winner and wants to win a World Series. And so that's what's ahead. And I got to tell you that everything that I've known about him here for 6 months, that I think it was legit. And so... but you make a point that everybody's kind of made internally and on the outside is like, huh, that looks a lot like a Gavin Sheets. So, yeah, what they're hoping for is a Gavin Sheets plus.
Yep. And again, the difference between Gavin Sheets and Ryan O'Hearn, Gavin Sheets is under contract through next year when the Padres may actually have an opening, whether it's at DH or at first base. Ryan O'Hearn is a pure rental. Not that that matters necessarily, but my guess is Gavin Sheets is a part of this team next year and Ryan O'Hearn is not, which is interesting to me. I'm most fascinated of all the players who they've acquired here at the deadline, Kevin, Freddie Fermin. Frankly, a guy I did not know a ton about outside of knowing that he was the catcher for the Royals who wasn't the future Hall of Famer. He's an interesting looking player. He's done some things already. I mean, shoot, he's hitting .429 with an OPS of .929. As the Padres catcher, I believe that that's over two whole games. But what do we make of Freddie Fermin so far?
Well, I'll tell you this. One person that I was talking to, and I was talking to a Padres baseball ops person about the price to get Freddie Fermin and just trying to get a grasp on, you know, well, look, if you had to give up two back-end starters, that was the price, right, for a backup catcher. And I was, when I used the term backup catcher in a sentence, it was not like, hey, we see him as a backup catcher. It was, we don't see him as a backup catcher. And that went along with everything that you've heard about him is that, hey, look, he was in a situation where Salvador Perez is going to play a lot, though Fermin got some playing time this year. Perez DHs quite a bit, but that they believe that this guy is their primary catcher probably next year as well. And then we'll see what's happening with Ethan Salas, but that they got a guy that plays the game the way they like, that can handle a pitching staff. Maybe he's not Martin Maldonado, but you know, there are other things that are more important too, and you have to have the full package. And they believe that they got a guy that can bring them as close to the full package as a catcher, right? Can. So they've tried a lot of catchers. So excuse me if I'm cynical, but certainly I would put him in the Lurianno. Other than maybe a couple balls going off his glove, which again, if we're going to temper anything about someone getting some hits in their first few games, and we're going to say it's just a few games, let's not make any judgments about Fermin's defense based on a couple games. But I think that they're very excited. And Tom Krasnovic asked me who was my pick to click, and it was Freddie Fermin. I mean, I just think the position he plays, the upside that you say or that people say he has, I think this could end up being one of the more intriguing of the acquisitions.
Yeah, early return, at least from my standpoint, not only is him hitting is a big deal, man, he's fun as hell to watch hit, I think. I mean, this is a guy who tries to use all fields, kind of attacks the ball, a little bit of a different vibe maybe from the hitting approach that previous Padres catchers have had, and not just this year.
And he's like a jockey too, and I don't mean that just because he's a little bit slight. He's lean, and like he isn't big, but he's lean, and he appears to be an athlete.
Baseball is the best sport, Kevin, because starting yesterday for the Padres, named Freddie Fermin, who looks like a jockey. Your words. And then he's going up against Pozo, the Cardinals catcher, who is not a jockey. Two very different looking guys playing the same position and frankly playing the same position pretty much well this year. Just totally interesting. I mean, they come in all shapes and sizes, baseball players.
Now, when they play the Dodgers and Freddie Fermin is up, Fermin is right behind the plate.
From a copy editing standpoint, we've only called him Felix Fermin once. So that's good. Just 1 day, and it wasn't you. So that's good. Somebody else.
Thanks for putting it in my head, though. Good, good.
Let's get on to the pitchers here for a minute, in part because we're going to see one of them tonight. Jay Pierce starting tonight against the Diamondbacks in Phoenix. A guy who certainly did not get the headlines in that trade. He wasn't Leo DeMason Miller. But this is a guy who's been a pretty serviceable left-handed pitcher in the A's rotation for the last 3 or 4 years. A guy who is over 30. I mean, this is an MLB veteran by starting pitcher standpoint. This from a starting pitcher standpoint, what do we see out of him and what are the expectations going forward?
Well, it's interesting. You got a veteran guy who you pretty much know what you're going to get, right? Versus guys, and we can kind of throw Nestor Cortes in there. They've decided that that's a veteran guy. He'll start Wednesday, that they know what they're going to get, even though obviously he was injured this year and only had maybe two starts. Versus three guys, Ryan Burgert, Stephen Kolek, and to some extent, Randy Vasquez, where it was a bit of a crapshoot every night. Now, that is not me putting them down at all. Like, the Padres basically could not have gotten more out of those three guys. And those three guys could not have given the Padres more, probably. And I think Randy Vasquez will be a key piece. You can say that there were some luck elements to his game, but that's what his game is. Contact and try to limit the damage. And that's a four or five starter, and that's fine. And Randy Vasquez will be an important piece of the Padres rotation going forward. But why is Randy gone and Cortez and Sears are here and the other two guys are gone? Because you've got depth pieces, a four and five starter who might end up for a stretch being a five and six starter. One of them might end up going to the bullpen for the end of the season and the postseason. But the guys that you know are going to give you something and keep you in a game, and you just didn't want to go into the stretch run in the postseason with guys who Ryan Burgert, you had to consider it a good start if he went five innings or four and two thirds innings and didn't give up a run or gave up one or two runs. That was a good start. That's not a good start if you are battling for the division in September and you've got 10 games in a row and your bullpen needs a little bit of a blow. That's why those guys are here.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think Wednesday night is appointment television. Nestor Cortez, I'll be honest with you, have not watched him probably since his breakout year with the Yankees. But if you like funky left-handers, the definition of a left-hander, Nestor Cortez, kind of strange getting to the plate, hesitation when he throws it. I mean, J.P. Sears, too, comes a little bit sidearm. These are different-looking pitchers than the guys they're replacing. Not only are they left-handed, they're funky veteran left-handers, kind of polar opposite of the guys who they're replacing in the rotation.
That's always interesting. It's not something the Padres have focused on in terms of, you know, mixing up their rotation, giving teams different looks. Their righties already give teams different looks. But yes, this is built in. Cortez will be fun to watch. And I should say, when I say why these guys are here, also, you needed to go out and get Cortez after you had to spend the two pitchers to get yourself a catcher. So there was a need there as well. But like, why them or one of them instead of Randy? Why weren't they okay with going forward with Hart? Or you just wanted some stability there is what you wanted. And some backup.
Right. And again,
someone got hurt or something, you know, one of the guys you are counting on got hurt or couldn't finish the season or had to miss a start. You didn't want to have to plug in with an unknown.
And Kevin, I know that you've said you thought last year's trade deadline may have been AJ Preller's best with the Padres. A move at trade deadline that we don't talk about nearly enough is Martin Perez. Mm-hmm. And the expectation here for Nestor Cortez, if he can be half as good as Martin Perez was when he was here last year, slotting in from a five spot and maybe coming out of the bullpen in the playoffs, that's a win because this guy came for essentially free.
The amazing thing is, the Padres basically didn't really add very much at all, getting veterans' salaries paid down $1 million or more dollars a piece. That's fantastic point. If Nestor Cortez can go 5-4, or the Padres, I'm sorry, can go 5-4 when in his starts or something. You as long as other people are picking up the slack, you know, as long as the Padres are going 8-2 or 7-3 and Nick Pivetta starts and 7-3 and Dylan Cease starts and, 6-4 and Darvish starts and whatever. And however many eight starts that Michael King makes, the Padres will be just fine because I'm trying to always counsel people who get down on these kids or pitchers in the back end of the rotation is like, they're in the back end of the rotation for a reason. They're there to give you a chance to win. Do you know that if you go five innings and give up three or fewer runs, your team wins 75% of the time? That teams are ecstatic if they get that out of their number five starter. And that was the definition of Randy Vasquez this season.
Yeah, it was. It was. And again, you make a good point. You know, again, he's under team control for next year. And I'd like to touch on two topics that you've written about here in recent days. Number one, I mean, you laid out sort of a tentative 2026 roster. There are some people who say that the Padres are all in on 2025, but some of the roster flexibility that they now have for 26 means there are a lot of set spots already for next year, and very few of them are killing you financially.
Yeah. Look, I don't want to paint too rosy a picture, but yes, you're absolutely right. They are more set going into, as of right now, they're more set going into spring training 2026 than they were 25 or 24, I would argue, based on what we knew at the time. We don't get to look back and go, oh, but they had Michael King in 2024. Yes, but what did you actually know? They were optimistic. You thought this guy had had a nice build up to being a starter, but you didn't know, right? And so they are more set, as in Gavin Sheets is your DH or your first baseman, possibly, right? Like his job to lose sort of thing. Left fielder, all indications are that Laureano will be that guy. These are positions you did not know about this year. And I know left field because the left field last year, Jurickson Profar, it was like, well, yeah, Jurickson's like a placeholder. You didn't know you were going to get a 900 OPS. Catcher, when is the last time? Now, there was Kyle Higashioka and Luis Camposano, but again, you didn't know what you were getting from Luis Camposano. And I'm not saying that now you know that Gavin Sheets is going to have another 750 OPS year or that Fermin is going to be what they say. But you are, all I'm saying is you are more certain with about the same cost about your lineup. And I would argue your rotation, though there are some questions there. Obviously losing King, Cease. You have Musgrove coming back from Tommy John. But you definitely your position playing positions. Nice turn of phrase, Kevin. Your roster is more set at the start of spring training.
Right. If the understanding is that Luis Arraez will probably be playing for somebody else, then that seems to be a fairly easy fix. You slide Gavin Sheets over to first base, maybe Cronenworth plays second. Then all of a sudden you're looking for a DH or a part-time DH, and there's your starting nine or starting eight, should you choose to do that. Right?
Yes.
I mean, yes. Now, I just made the rookiest of rookie mistakes. I'm assuming AJ Preller is going to sit on his hands, which probably isn't going to happen. But they're set, at least in terms of cost control for next year. You're not going to be under the gun, maybe as financially as you might have been had you gone and tried to sign a left fielder, sign a catcher, sign a DH or a first baseman during the offseason.
It's, you know, anecdotally, I would say this because I'm not like scientific. I haven't really even asked anyone about this, but I am basing it on things that have been said to me and how they've gone about things. You know, AJ Preller is playing chess while maybe other guys have either, I don't want to say other guys are playing checkers, but maybe other guys aren't even playing right at the trade deadline. And he is killing it the last 2 years at in terms of making moves his team needs, right? We don't know how they're going to turn out. It's kind of like a manager pinch hitting or bringing in a certain reliever. It could be the right move or the wrong move, but we don't know how it's going to turn out. In the offseason, it's not like he hasn't made moves. 2023, the big Soto for, you know, the big haul trades, bringing in Cease, signing Pivetta before this season. But he feels like he has a core the last few years that can keep him in it. Let him see what kind of team they are, and then at the trade deadline, go and sign some guys. You're not paying them the full fare, and you know what you need already versus pushing all those chips in to a certain extent because there's only so much money out there in for the entire season when you've already got Manny, Fernando Tatis, Xander Bogaerts, Jackson Merrill. You've already got all these guys that, you know, and you have enough pitching that you should be in it at the trade deadline. And then the trade deadline is where you make your moves. And so I think it's a really good thing that they would be, as we are talking about, pretty set for the start of 2026.
Right. Kevin, when I was in college, I learned after my first or second year that if you bought your books as you go, instead of buying all your books at the start of each semester, remember books, by the way, you could save $1,000 or two every year by only sort of getting these things on an as-needed basis. Maybe this is the world's worst analogy, but AJ Preller now has a situation where, you know, if there is a giant hole at a certain position or if somebody gets hurt, he can fill that in July instead of having to fill that in April. And maybe it's a little bit more of a buyer's market by then.
I think it's a great analogy. I thought you were going to talk about my college philosophy, which was I learned that I could study just enough the night before the final to pass. But I like yours is much better and apropos to what he does.
Padres Diamondbacks 3-game series starting tonight. It's the weird 6:45, 6:45, or 6:40, 6:40, 6:40.
Yeah, because the Padres are, you know, off on Thursday and the flight's so short. The once again, the only person who gets screwed is the rider.
Yes, absolutely. Tonight, Monday night, J.P. Sears makes his Padres debut against Brandon Pfaadt. J.P. Sears, let's talk about him just a little bit. 3.34 strikeout to walk ratio is the highest of his career so far. Struggled playing in Sacramento. ERA of about 5.5 there. But Kevin, you've seen games there. You've been there. Probably not a great place for a major league pitcher to pitch, huh?
Probably not a great place to be as a major leaguer. But yes, tough place. Who knows? I mean, the guy is decent enough. And I look forward to seeing how it plays out. But that is a very good point. You've got to take atmosphere, how the ball flies, the size of the park. You've got to take all that into account. I think that this guy will be adequate. I am very interested to see how the Padres do against Brandon Pfaadt, who, what, was it eight shutout or eight? One run, eight, two? He shoved last time. Now, he's coming off a terrible outing, but this is a guy I thought they had figured out previously, but he's pitched really well against them recently.
Yeah, is a guy, I mean, at home somehow. Explain these splits to me, Kevin. 3.68 ERA at Chase Field, which I will argue with you, outside of Colorado and Cincinnati, might be the worst place in baseball to pitch in terms of giving up home runs. People underestimate what a bandbox Chase Field is, whether the roof is closed or open.
And the huge outfield for all the hits and everything, too. Yeah.
Yes. 3.24 ERA in 7 starts career against the Padres. Beat him. Yeah, he allowed 2 runs over 8 innings last time they squared off. I am excited to see Tuesday's matchup. Not because of Ryan Nelson, even though he has a 1.95 ERA over his last 9 starts, but because I want to see Yu Darvish again. He got in a time machine in his last start, and my goodness, it was fun to watch. Do they feel like this is more of the Yu Darvish that they're going to get going forward?
Well, they certainly hope so, and yes, they do feel that. You know, they would say yes, but they would also say, you know, we got to wait and see. But like this guy, if there's anybody you can count on to, you know, give you some consistency with flashes of brilliance, it's there. It's Yu Darvish. That was fantastic. Mechanical change he made, I wrote about that, and a little bit the pitch mix different, which you can do all the time. Don't even need to really mention it, but it was different. That was fantastic. Again, didn't look up my stats. Believe that was 7 shutout. So pretty good.
Yeah, pretty good. 4 weeks ago tonight, Yu Darvish returned from the injured list against these Diamondbacks at Petco Park. Did not look good. It was 2 runs in 3 2/3 innings, was spiking a lot of pitches, clearly looking for his feel there. It seems as if his feel is back. Although, if I recall correctly, he does not like pitching in Phoenix.
Right. He doesn't. Now, just hasn't gone well for him there. Doesn't like the turf, the mound. Mm-hmm. I'm reasonably sure that I remember I used to make a big deal out of it. And then I'm reasonably sure he's had some pretty good starts here recently where I've been like, okay, you know, Yu Darvish is a professional. He overcomes that. But yes, there have been some times where whatever it was, some matchups, the ballpark, whatever. There were a couple times they scheduled it around so he didn't pitch here.
Right. I seem to remember that it was the turf or the landing surface did something to his lower back, if I recall correctly. There was something there. Wednesday, you got Nestor Cortez. We've talked about him already, former Yankee, I guess a Brewer for 2 starts, and now a Padre. Going up against, and here's a name, Anthony DeSclafani. Remember him? Formerly of the Reds and Giants. He is now a Diamondback after he opted out of a minor league deal with the Yankees. You know, kind of just a guy this year.
I remember that when we were here last time, he was signed. And by the way, that day pitched against the Padres in relief. So yep. Now he's in their rotation. Obviously, they've had some changes, and now we get to see him. I do remember when this guy was on the mound, it was like, uh-oh, but that was a different Padres team and a different De Sclafani. That's not to say he couldn't shove here tomorrow, but this guy's been around for a while.
He has. They went on a little stretch there. I think it was late May when they signed De Sclafani. They signed the catcher, James McCann, who was raking for them when they came to San Diego last month. That was back when they thought they were buyers. Now they are very clearly sellers. Very interested to see some of the names that they'll run out there tonight against the Padres. I'm guessing not a whole lot of household names there outside of maybe their shortstop and right fielder.
Well, right, and not a lot of guys that like Naylor was owning his former team and to a certain extent and then having a very good year also, not just against the Padres, but did have some big hits. And obviously Eugenio Suarez had some big hits against the Padres and lots of big hits against everybody else. So those are two very dangerous parts of your lineup that are gone.
Right. Kevin, I'm going to put you on the spot here at the end, and this is a baseball question. This is a Joe Musgrove question. He told you he wants to just pitch one inning this year to show that it can be done. If the over-under right now is half an inning on Joe Musgrove, is he pitching more than that or less? What do we think?
Oh, because my heart says yes. By the way, it was even if it's only one inning. He wants to come in and, if it's Joe, he wants to come in and throw six in game one of the World Series. But that's not obviously realistic. But my heart says, and my belief in Joe Musgrove based on what I've seen, is that Joe Musgrove is going to be back pitching. All things considered, it may have gotten less likely based on the acquisitions they got. Now, I will say this. The Padres are open to anything, and if anything, have been fostering Joe's belief in himself that he can come back, saying, if you can, like, do it, man. And if it makes sense, we'll have a spot for you. Man, I just don't know what to – I don't know, because Joe Musgrove is one of those guys you don't rule out. You just don't. Anybody else almost, I'd say, this just – even if you're ready, if you have a staff that doesn't need – I mean, first off, you would never push him anyway. But if you have a staff that doesn't need him, no. But it's Joe Musgrove, who has traveled with you, who's been involved in pitchers' meetings, been helping out everybody, is so important to him, is going to be here 2 years beyond this. Like, I just don't know, Ryan. I'm not going to bet against Joe Musgrove.
It would be, if this team does something special, and again, we're getting way ahead of ourselves, Joe Musgrove, it would be so cool if Joe Musgrove was a part of it officially, as opposed to just being in the dugout most nights, because I know how much this franchise winning means to him, you know?
Yes, there is a thing of, yes, you want to maximize your roster, right? Mm-hmm. But, like, there's always a pitcher who goes unused, almost. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not saying, look, I'm just brainstorming like they do. By the way, the reason the Padres are able to pull off some of the stuff they do is that's all they do is sit around and talk baseball and scenarios. So that's what you and I are doing now. And I'm going, man, couldn't you find a spot for Joe Musgrove? Because now that's me saying the guy's bullpens have gone well. Some rehab outings have gone well. You're watching him. You love the stuff. You don't think it's going to jeopardize. Everything like is set to go. Joe Musgrove's ready to come back. Can't you find a spot for him? Can't he help you? Here's my thing. Where? Like, is it Yuki Matsui, who might not be on a playoff roster, right? Anyway, because I don't know who he replaces, right? They have enough.
No, that's
lefties.
A great point.
They have enough guys who have good splits. I don't know that it would be unheard of to replace Yuki Matsui with Joe Musgrove, but like, so. I think Joe Musgrove will be ready or can be ready. The human body's a weird thing. We could have a quote-unquote setback, not a setback toward being ready for 26, but a setback toward being ready for October. But if he's ready, I bet you he's on the roster.
I'm just trying to think of a moment where that bullpen door swings open and it's Joe Musgrove at Petco Park pitching a playoff game. That would be the goosebumps moment of the year, probably. You know,
even if they were up by 10, it would be the goosebumps moment. Of course, everybody'd be all jacked, and you know, of course, it would be. But hey, even if they were down by 5 in the ninth, and he came in to cover that inning, I think people would go nuts. I think you're right.
You're right. Guys rehabbing from Tommy John surgery are often out of sight, out of mind. I think Joe Musgrove's done a really good job of being a part of this team. Still a leader, still a go-to guy, Kevin, even for you, right?
Yes, I have tried to respect the fact that he's both him and the fact he's not playing, right? There's certain things that you know, that he doesn't need to weigh in on, or that, you know, guys that are playing would be more. But absolutely, and then he is just so good at this. Like, there's just few guys that are as good as the package, the being a good player who contributes and it being important to them to be a leader. And sometimes being a leader is knowing when to not be around or not say something. And if you're not playing, even if you're Joe Musgrove, there's times that you just don't say something. And like, the guy just has a feel. He has it. Joe Musgrove has it. So, yeah.
Awesome. Padres Diamondbacks 3-game series, 640, 640, 640, tonight, Tuesday, and Wednesday. That'll do it for this episode of the Hot Lava Podcast. For Kevin Acey, I'm Ryan Finley. We'll see you next time.